Financial services institutions, or banks, as lay people call them, have been early adopters of Kafka. My coworker Fodi Filikouris has been working in financial services his whole career. He currently works as a solutions engineer, helping banks figure out how to build things out of Kafka and Confluent. We talked to him today about a few key use cases he's seen emerge in that sector. And we also riff a little bit about the profession of being a solutions engineer. It's a pretty interesting conversation. Before we get to it, I should note that streaming audio is brought to you by Confluent Developer. That's developer.confluent.io. Our intent for Confluent Developer is that it be a place on the web that has everything you need to get started using Kafka and Confluent. We've got video courses, we've got executable tutorials, a patterns library, there's an index of episodes of this podcast, all kinds of things. You should check it out. And if you do any of the tutorials and you have to sign up on Confluent Cloud, good thing for you. We don't want you to have to spend money to do that learning, so you can use the code PODCAST100 when you sign up to get an extra $100 of free credit. Check it out. But now, let's get to the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined in the virtual studio today by Fodi Filikouris. Fodi is a senior solutions engineer here at Confluent, which means he works with people who are trying to build things and trying to figure out what it is they can build, what's going to work, what's not, works with them on a technical level. And Fodi, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. Long-time listener, Tim. First-time caller.
Nice. So. I like it. I'm glad. Glad you've been a listener. Yeah. You happen to work with customers and prospects in finance, and that's what I want to talk about today, which is exciting to me because my favorite, you know, customer meetings are a percentage of my job. Back in the day when I was on the road all the time, that was a big thing. You know, you go to a conference and you go meet with customers and feel like that's kind of maybe coming back soon. But financial services folks have always been some of my favorite conversations because, I don't know, the problems are just cool and they tend to be fairly advanced in their thinking. So I want to dig into stuff you found, like what are people building and how are people solving problems? But first, tell us about what you do and how you got to do that thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I've been working in data infrastructure, I guess, for the past 6-7 years. So I've held kind of every job you possibly could within the IT world. I started working in tech support. Then I became an implementation consultant, traveled the world. And then I had the, you know, tremendous opportunity to actually become a solutions engineer. Someone gave me a shot, as one does happen within their career. And they said, hey, Fodi, are you interested in actually talking with a bunch of different people about a bunch of different challenging problems that they have within their business? I said, yeah, great. That sounds amazing. And the rest was history, as they say. So I've been as I live in New York here, I've been working in financial services for the better part of my career.
Gee, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've been working with Apache products for the past, I would say, about 5 years. So prior to working with Kafka, I worked for and with architectures around another Apache product called Apache Ignite. That led me to talking to a bunch of Java meetups worldwide, a bunch of Apache meetups. I've spoken at a bunch of Apache Kafka meetups, and banking is my life, as they say. So, nice. Thanks for having me here today.
You got it. And I've been in the Kafka world and with Confluent for a little more than 4 years, but I got 7 years in the Apache world. So I'm kind of like you. Prior to this, there was another Apache project.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to do well with a lot of things, but the big infrastructure stuff tends to gravitate there. I just want to pick your brain about what people are doing with Kafka in financial services and what are problems that they're solving, what like looks super good and is easy and enables whole new vistas of awesomeness and what's hard to do. And let's just kind of talk about Kafka in FinServ FinTech.
Sure. Yeah. So I think like initially when, you know, I started working exclusively with Kafka, even prior to that, and all the architectures that I worked with, you know, customers and partners, like Kafka was somewhere there. This was over 3 years ago. So you could see that Kafka had a critical place in kind of data infrastructure and architectures. But once I actually came to Confluent and started working, you know, with customers directly, I think the growing trend that we saw was kind of messaging modernization. Like people in financial services viewed Kafka as this pipe where we could connect things from point A to point B and do it scalably, right?
Like a message queue, but a really big message queue.
But a giant one, right? Exactly. Yeah.
What would be better than the message queues that we have? Much bigger message queues.
Yeah, that's very American of you.
Yeah, it captures the spirit of not just the United States, but also the finance world.
Correct. Yes. And I think, you know, what we were seeing initially is that like things like IBM MQ and your TIBCOs, right? And your like, you know, traditional JMS messaging that's been out there in the wild for, you know, close to a decade or more now, you know, they were running into some scalability issues and some problems with it. In just the way that infrastructure works and kind of how Kafka is distributed, you know, infrastructure, there was many advantages there. They could push higher throughput. And, you know, the status quo was, you know, I have a new project or I have new data sources that are much more easily integrated with Kafka. I'm going to move away from something like a JMS. So that was like kind of the world as I knew it, at least when I initially started working with Kafka. And things progressed, you know, companies obviously discovered new and different ways of implementing Kafka using things like, you know, event stores, right? With something like Kafka Streams and things like KSQL and starting to make meaningful insights with data in real time directly within Kafka. So no longer now was Kafka just a pipe. It was an intelligent pipe where I could move things intelligently and get meaningful insights out of that data. But the real innovation actually has, you know, at least in my perspective, has been recently with the COVID-19 pandemic. Hmm. And I say that because digital modernization, you know, that buzzword that's out there in the world, banks have actually had to adopt that increasingly because their number of impressions and transactions from a digital perspective have increased exponentially over the course of the pandemic.
Really? Okay. I guess people used to do retail banking and now they didn't. Was that?
Well, I think the idea is now that a lot more people were doing digital and retail banking, right? So on the retail side of the house, you had, you know, e-commerce and those types of transactions went up exponentially during
the pandemic. Okay. And all those payments got to get cleared.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, so you just touched upon maybe three or four different sides of the bank that needed to scale tremendously, right? The retail side, web presence side, payments on the back end, clearing payments and settlements. All of that stuff needed to be kind of revolutionized a bit. And tremendous investment has been pushed forward over the course of the past year and a half to help drive some of that innovation.
So. Nice. So let's dig into those. Pick your favorite, and let's talk about how Kafka has impacted it. Because again, I've talked through some of these stories, and I just love them. So I want them from a guy who's boots on the ground all the time. And
So first thing, I mean, I think that's been pretty interesting has been on the retail side of the bank. So I work with a couple customers here in the Northeast. That have completely transformed their whole retail banking built on top of Kafka. Hmm. So one of the, well, I'll give you a perfect example. One of my partners initially my customers here, decided, hey, you know, it would be a great idea if we stored all of our data permanently, indefinitely within Kafka.
Yes.
And you'd ask,
that would be a great idea.
Well, for you and me, that sounds great. But for
I don't mean just commercially. I just mean that architecturally, that's where the magic is.
But if Kafka is a giant pipe, right? Why would anyone ever do that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You don't store things in pipes. You flow things through pipes.
Correct. Right. And I'd like to position the perfect example for someone, especially, and this was kind of it was a resounding type of use case that made me understand why they wanted to do this. So if you're scrolling through your online banking transactions on your phone, and you're actually trying to look through the last, 10 days worth of your transactions, you scroll and you scroll and you scroll, and eventually you get to a point where you can't scroll anymore, right? Because that data actually sits in and has been offloaded into some cold storage or some data lake or something like that, right? And from a user experience perspective, I don't want to have to go and download a statement to see what I actually purchased. I want to look back in time as far as I can, and I want to be able to search all of that data and index it and say, hey, when's the last time I went to Starbucks in October, right? Mm-hmm. And now, magically, keeping all of that data within Kafka, they were actually able to do that. They were able to seek back to the beginning of that topic, which was their transaction log, directly within their phone and say, hey, there it is. I don't need to go download my statement. It sounds trivial, but it's actually something that they measured from a user perspective that was tremendously, tremendously popular, okay. Right? So we started seeing things like that. We started seeing innovations on, one of our banks wanted to build everything within, on top of Kafka. Another one of our banks and banking partners here said, hey, you know what would be great is if we actually deploy Kafka for our retail bank directly within the cloud.
Okay? Hey, okay. Again, it seems like that idea has come up more than once, but I love it.
It sounds good. But if you or if anyone's worked in banking, you know that, the cloud is a kind of a taboo term in a sense. It's not somewhere for that banks tend to go.
And I don't want to sidetrack you from your story. So I want to get back here because this is a very forward-looking Kafka user and everything. But yep. Could you just tell everybody why that is? Is it because I'll propose a reason, and maybe you can tell me that reason is not true.
Sure.
Banks don't look to the cloud because they are stodgy and conservative and can't countenance change in their technology stack. Is that the reason? Or is there...
No.
That's no, not it's not, is it?
No, no, it's not the reason. Although a lot of people would like to paint, banks in that shade of gray.
It's fun. It's easy. It's not true. So what's the deal there?
A lot of it is compliance related, right? And that's just the fact of the matter. I mean, when you're a highly regulated business, and this isn't unique to banks, but it's certainly true for banks. You see this in other industries as well, healthcare, anything that requires HIPAA compliance or anything like that. If there is any potential that data, there's a breach in your data or that your data is exposed, externally, you can get heavily fined. And that's what comes with regulation. There's an operating expense for not being secure. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So when it comes to banks, it's not, banks are conservative. They don't want to move to the cloud. It's banks don't want to get fined. They don't want to lose money, and they want to secure their customers' data the best way that they can. And it's taken some time for the cloud vendors to get there with some of their security. That's a separate conversation. But this one forward-looking customer, as you mentioned, said, "Hey, we're ready to go. We want to deploy Kafka, our whole retail bank, and build it in the cloud." If you look back 2 years ago and ask yourself, is that humanly possible? I would have told you, Tim, no way. No way would any type of customer ever think about doing that within banking. And I got to say, I can't help but feel like the elasticity that they get in the cloud and how they could scale not only their infrastructure, but how they can build a lot of their applications on top of Kafka. You know, a lot of that was impacted by the pandemic and how quickly they needed to get that solution off the ground.
Got it.
So,
and well, I mean, we don't dance around the fact that we kind of like Confluent Cloud. This is a Confluent podcast. It's completely fine.
Yep.
And those scalability properties are things that have been built into Confluent Cloud.
Correct.
I mean, with great difficulty, we've watched them over the past 3 years kind of unfold, and it's not like, well, it's in the cloud, so it's elastic. You know, no, it's people had to build things that were super hard to build to make it that magical. Yeah, that's there and has been there in Confluent Cloud since the beginning of the pandemic. By the way, I want to clarify a thing. When I was introducing you and what you do, solutions engineer, and we're talking about customers and there's like a very commercial focus mm-hmm. to the way you approach things. So mm-hmm. I think many of you know what an SE is. And this is just typical enterprise software company speak. So if you work in the enterprise, you know this. If you don't, you might not. There's no reason for you to know how this stuff works. But informally, so solutions engineer is the title. Informally, I often just say sales engineer, and nobody likes that. But
no, it's a slimy term.
It's bad. Sales right. is bad. Sales is in fact not bad because you have to help people solve problems and do things. And
yeah.
people don't usually spend money. You don't use guns. You know, they do it voluntarily because it helps them. But the role of an SE is to be the technical component of that process. So you come from an engineering background and you help people who are customers who are maybe wanting to become customers figure out how to build stuff. Because I said the figure out how to build stuff earlier, but you work with customers. So that's if you're detecting this commercial orientation, well, you better believe it because that's Fody's job is to help that stuff happen. That's what an SE does. So anyway.
Yeah. And just like a little coda on that, I would say like I'm quite often in a position to tell people where I don't think Kafka works, mm-hmm. Which may sound like, hey, you're a sales guy. Why would you do that? Well, I'm not a sales guy. I help a sales guy. Right.
That's technically.
Technically, like, you know, even in banking, I mean, I'll tie it back to banking. I mean, we have customers that come back to us and say, hey, you know, Kafka is this great thing. I want to use it for everything. And oh, by the way, I want to do all these great things like, you know, ad hoc analytics, right, on top of my Kafka cluster. And I'd say to them, well, you know, Kafka does indexing, but doesn't really do indexing. So, you know, if you want to like do full table scans, if you're familiar with a database, like every time you want to do some kind of ad hoc, like, you know, query analysis or ad hoc analytics, use a database. Right?
Yeah, the physics of that activity are different. And even an analytics database. I mean, we've had we talked about Druid on this show before.
Yep.
Have we talked about Pinot? Okay, I've done a bunch of stuff with the Pinot folks, but I don't know if they've been on the podcast yet. I need to check.
One of my former colleagues works there. I can.
Oh no, I got the StarTree contacts. But the point is, there are these other things that become a part of an ecosystem with Kafka that do those because the physics of that activity is different. And so you're going to say that.
And you have to be objective. Like, there's no way that you can build like architectures and really gain credibility with anyone that's technical. If you tell them that, you know,
that is so true.
Yeah. Kafka is a hammer, right? For your foot. I mean. But
yeah, if it is a hammer, well, then let's find nails.
Correct.
And hammer them. Yeah. And I don't want to sidetrack on this for too long, but it's an interesting topic because number one, you exist to relate to the technical people who are the ones building the thing out of Kafka at this company who maybe wants to spend money or is spending money with Confluent.
Right.
And as we know, as people who have spent careers building things, it's got to work. And if it doesn't, and if it's the wrong thing, you're still there. You're in that relationship and you're dealing with it. And
we look horribly, right?
And your life is terrible. So nobody wants that.
No.
You're not a sales guy, you help a sales guy. salesperson. And
put that on my headstone, Tim. Yeah.
And it's the funny thing is my interaction and sort of my team's interaction with customers when we do customer meetings is always to come alongside and support the SE, because you know we'll kind of blow in for a day and do a talk and get a group together and you know I always say when you have real questions I'm gone tomorrow.
Yep.
And the SE is not. The SE is there to actually be helping you over the long term and has to be able to deliver the goods, or everything falls apart. So anyway, I don't remember where we were, but that excursus on solutions engineering, I think is important because it's a super cool role. And, you know, if you're a person who has been writing software and building systems for a while and you like people and you don't mind traveling, I mean, this is I think an awesome place for a career to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do a little mentoring to the university, my alma mater, Stony Brook University out here and on Long Island. And yeah, I always recommend folks check out solutions engineering because no one's ever heard of it until they get into enterprise software. And it's a cool way to deal with complex problems with really, really interesting use cases. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely where a lot of my passion in technology resides. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right. Back to let's talk about another Kafka use case. Enough of this. Enough of the meta discussion that I keep going into.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about kind of the retail banking side. You know, so we've talked about like front end customer interactions. How a lot of, at least the trends that I've seen in a lot of banks, they needed to scale up incredibly quickly to deal with a lot of this increased demand and throughput and transactionality of their business. But then there's the middle office and the back office side to that component as well, specifically within payments, that we've seen kind of tremendous interest and a lot of innovation has gone into the payment side of banking, whether that be treasury payments, whether that be modernizing how, you know, ACH, payments get settled. There's a lot of really interesting stuff going on the payment side. So I think that'd be maybe a natural place to take the conversation.
Let's do it. Let's dive in. I love payments.
Okay. Yeah, great. So a lot of legacy payment infrastructure has been built on top of your traditional messaging systems out there. Messaging, about 10 years ago, when we talk about things like IBM MQ and TIBCOs of the world, they did really good guarantee, right? They guaranteed message delivery. And I think what a lot of our like the leadership that we've been working with now, they enjoy about Kafka is that they get kind of the best of both worlds. They get increased scalability working with Kafka. They get, guarantees with exactly one semantics, right, within the Kafka world. And they get the storage layer for replayability. And within payments, you know, when you're working with something like your MQs of the world, not to diminish that technology, it was great and revolutionary at the time for middleware, but it doesn't have those same facets from a feature set perspective that folks are really looking for today. So for example, if I read a payment from a queue and I lose that payment or my client fails, and I need to try and reread that or replay that, right? Somehow, how do I do that today, right? And
without
Kafka, and I think that involves a lot of different technologies. That involves a lot of complexity on the clients and the way that they need to build their clients to handle situations where they would get duplicates or they would have to go back to an originating system and request a file. And once that file gets generated, they have to parse that file to and then do a diff to see, hey, we actually received these payments, but we didn't receive these payments. And backing all of that stuff out was kind of a nightmare. In steps Kafka, right? And so for example, I'll give you an example of a use case. So one of our customers has been forced, I should say forced like it's a bad way, but they've been forced by the innovation of a lot of new SaaS-based technologies like your Ubers of the world to expand into developing markets. So markets like, you know, places, remote locations in Africa, for example, remote locations in Asia that traditionally haven't been big markets. Now, with the introduction of technologies like your Ubers, things like Amazon that are shipping there, now we require payments and payment settlement locally within a region, within an actual country. And there are some actual compliance and regulatory requirements in certain countries that say, hey, you need to settle all of your transactions locally before we can do anything with them, right? And folks are starting to say, well, I have all of my payment infrastructure that lives here in the United States or in Europe, but I need to get all that data that's been settled locally from a payment perspective in under a day, because Uber is coming out there or some other large e-commerce, you know, giant out there is saying, hey, I need all of your transactions settled within a day.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. And they're a big enough chunk of the business that, what are you going to do?
Demands have been made. Technology needs to follow. Right.
Okay.
So in steps Kafka, and Kafka now, and you know, we'll talk about Kafka, you know, because I feel like we've been very Confluent centric, right? But Kafka is
okay. We talk about Kafka a lot on this show. I mean, you're cool, but go on.
Okay. Well, so some of the things that we provide, I guess, you know, from Kafka in general, and you see out there, you know, in the community, are, you know, things like Mirror Maker 2, right, that allow for you know mechanisms of replicating data. So we can de-identify some of the payment information that's been settled locally from a remote location, you know, in Africa or in Asia, and roll up those settlements by doing some kind of method of replication to a centralized payment infrastructure that's living in, you know, somewhere in EMEA or you know, Europe, or somewhere in the United States. Now, where Confluent comes into play is obviously we provide and we're in the process of providing something like that we're building out there for multi-region clusters, cluster linking, some really cool things within our architecture that are allowing us to almost create like this notion of namespacing within Kafka, which I think is like, you know, kind of revolutionary to a degree of saying, these are global payment topics. These are local payment topics. I can all define them at the topic layer and send data where it needs to without impacting things like GDPR and local types of regulatory and compliance settlement laws that exist in some of these municipalities and local governments. So really cool stuff that's going on there.
Now, maybe wrapping up, kind of a top level question. I'm thinking of this thing Winston Churchill said. He said a lot of things, but he said, we shape our buildings and then our buildings shape us. And you've got, you know, demands of the business and just general desire for modernization pressuring a Kafka adoption. But now you've got this new event streaming architecture beginning to underpin things. Do you see that driving the way banks behave or features they deploy? Or you kind of hinted at that with like Uber, but that's still exogenous, you know, from the outside. But what do you see this? How's it play out? How's banking change now that it's getting Kafkafied?
Well, so like what people need to understand, and I think a lot of people that are in the industry understand, but if you're kind of a developer and you work in the open source world and you don't deal with the enterprise as much, this might be some insight for you. There's two sides to building and innovating within the, you know, any type of, at least in the banking world, to my experience, right? There's the business and the business side, mm-hmm. and then there's the technology side. And the business says you have to do X, Y, and Z, and the technology side tells them how they can't do it. And then the business says you need to get it done by yesterday, and the technology side says, hey, Fody, can you help me? That's been my experience.
And you say, yes,
yes, baby. I can try. I can try. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we hearkened on it and we touched on it a bit, but you know, you have companies like Uber, you have companies like Amazon, you have companies like Google that are out there that are saying, hey, we have these giant marketplaces and you know, the ways of traditional banking just don't work for us anymore. We can't wait 2 to 3 days, you know, for an ACH payment to get settled, right? ACH is, you know, been around since the 70s, right?
And it shows.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I've been around since the 70s, but I can get a lot of things done in less than 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Well, ACHs were designed for like, you know, non-business critical payments, right? And I think what we're finding is that the volume of payments that are going on nowadays are actually these non-business critical payments, right? And, you know, things that are going through like, you know, separate types of clearinghouses or the critical types of payments. I mean, they're larger payments, and they're treasury payments, but they don't meet the volume that you know, what's going on in today's world. So banks need to adopt, they need to scale. And Kafka really does solve, a big hole in a lot of architectures that they have, whether it's passing data from A to B, whether it's the incredible integration suite that Kafka has built around it with Connect, or whether it's, you know, complex event processing and the things that we've done with Kafka Streams and KSQL. Kafka kind of checks a lot of different boxes as an ecosystem for banks that they would probably need a multitude of other tools to use to get the same type of functionality. And, you know, when they get unreasonable types of requests from the business to say, hey, you know, build us a flux capacitor, right? They can come back and say, well, you know, at least we can get 90% of the way there, or 70 or 80% of the way there with Kafka. And I think that's been really powerful and a really, really compelling part of kind of what I do within banking and kind of the things that we're seeing within banking.
My guest today has been Fody Flokouris. Fody, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thank you very much, Tim. And I just want to shout out the Northeast SE team and, thank you again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And there you have it. Thanks for listening to this episode. Now, some important details before you go. Streaming Audio is brought to you by Confluent Developer. That's developer.confluent.io, a website dedicated to helping you learn Kafka, Confluent, and everything in the broader event streaming ecosystem. We've got free video courses, a library of event-driven architecture design patterns, executable tutorials covering KSQL DB, Kafka Streams, and core Kafka APIs. There's even an index of episodes of this podcast. So if you take a course on Confluent Developer, you'll have the chance to use Confluent Cloud. When you sign up, use the code PODCAST100 to get an extra $100 of free Confluent Cloud usage. Anyway, as always, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on the YouTube video if you're watching and not just listening, or reach out in our community Slack or forum. Both are linked in the show notes. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover us, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.